What's happening? Good Monday morning to all of you. Thanks for joining me as always. It is much appreciated. Let's start with Drake May, because Drake May, over the weekend, his Patriots career officially began on the practice field in uniform with a helmet on, a New England Patriot. Drake May is what we saw this past weekend with rookie minicamp. And, you know, this was the first time he suited up. And as we've talked about before, the number one priority of this preseason, whether we're talking about rookie minicamp, mandatory minicamp, training camp, preseason, the number one priority for this football team is to make sure that the development of Drake May is handled properly. And so I think we saw a glimpse of how the Patriots are going to develop their young quarterback. First of all, they have a bevy of coaching resources. And we've talked about it, all the names, all the guys that are on this staff that are going to work with Drake May over the next year to get him to a place where he is ready to take the keys and be the franchise quarterback of the Patriots. Evan Lazar wrote this over the weekend on the Patriots' approach with May. Along with getting in the playbook with his fellow rookies, May gave us a glimpse into who will be in his ear from a coaching perspective. The Pats quarterback spent most of the practice working closely with quarterbacks coach T.C. McCartney and offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt. Also in the vicinity was senior offensive assistant Ben McAdoo, and doing his best Ernie Adams impression with folded arms off to the side was assistant coach Evan Rothstein. No detail, folks. No detail is going to be overlooked. This is a coaching staff that is fully aware that they have a quarterback that needs development. He needs planning. They need to work on the footwork. They need to work on the throwing mechanics. They need to make sure that as they install the playbook, he is well aware of what they're doing and how they want to do it. And they have eyes on him at all times at these practices. He's not going to take a single step on that practice field without somebody watching him, whether it's Rothstein or it's Van Pelt or it's McAdoo or it's McCartney. Somebody at all times will be working with Drake May and making sure he is doing the right things to become the quarterback that they need him to become. It's as simple as that. They're not going to overlook any details, and they can't overlook any details. We've talked about this before. You can't swing and miss on May. They took the big swing. Now you have to do what you have to do to make sure that he is ready and he is prepared to take over the job eventually from Jacoby Brissett, whether it's week one, week eight, week 15, whenever. They have to make sure that all of these resources, coaching-wise, are utilized correctly to get the most out of the quarterback. Now, Mayo said over the weekend, we had been talking about who was going to be the main voice, who would be the lead voice in the ear of May, because they have all these coaches that we just mentioned. Well, Mayo said over the weekend that Alex Van Pelt will be the lead voice speaking with and speaking to Drake May during this camp season, and it makes sense during camp. Van Pelt has the most experience working with quarterbacks. He obviously is a former NFL quarterback. So the beginning of this process, the implementation of the footwork in the mechanics, in the playbook, all of those things, making sure that the quarterback has chemistry with his receivers, understands the dropbacks, working under center, all of those things, makes a lot of sense that Van Pelt is going to lead that charge to begin with, because he has the most experience dealing with that position. Now, I think this will eventually change when you get to the season, because as we get to the season, I believe T.C. McCartney will be the person who's working with May during game weeks. He's the quarterback's coach. Of course, May will have practices, and he'll be practicing, and Van Pelt will be out there calling plays. But when I talk about in the film room, right, with these sessions, talking to the coaches, going over things that need to be worked on, need to be improved upon, I believe during the season, T.C. McCartney will have a big-time voice during game week. And then when you get to Sunday, it'll be Alex Van Pelt's job in the ear of Drake May in that helmet going over certain things during the game. I think that's how it's going to work. But to start this process makes a lot of sense to me that you start the process with Alex Van Pelt at the helm. So Van Pelt is going to be the lead voice, at least for now, for the rookie quarterback. All right, let's go to Charlie with a super chat, sending in a $10 super chat on this Monday. I appreciate you, Charlie. Morning. Felt nice seeing the rookies on the field working together this weekend. Optimistic time of year. It is. This is the time of hope, right? when you look at Jalen Polk and you look at Javon Baker and you look at Drake May out there and Jaheim Bell, this is the time for hope. This is when you look into the future, because once we get close to the season and once these decisions are made and once we know, for example, that Jacoby Brissett, he's going to be starting week one, once those decisions are made, then we start to process what this team is and we look at the impact of all of the players that have been added to this roster, all of the players that have been brought back. We look at the expectations and then we react week to week to what's happening. So right now, yes, as we sit here in May, this is the time of year to be optimistic, to look forward, to be excited for the future. And fans should be excited for the future. It's no guarantee it's going to work out. But why not be excited? Why sit there and wait for dread? They have some talented guys that they drafted, and now they have to invest in those guys properly. They've got to develop them properly. And we hope that in the future we will see Jalen Polk and Baker and Bell and even the offensive linemen with Wallace and Robinson along with May flourish. And some might flourish before others. That's fine. But yes, this is the time for optimism. I appreciate the super chat, Charlie. It means an awful lot to me. Every time you send a super chat, people, you get to jump to the front of the line with your comment or your question. And of course, you help us financially here. You support us at the program during these slower times. As people are going out, they're enjoying their summers. They've moved away from football, some of them, for at least the next month or two. So I appreciate it. And also, don't forget, along with the super chats, you can like this podcast on the YouTube channel. That will up the eyeballs watching this product. So don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review, and throw a comment in as you watch. Whether you like it or not, throw a comment in with your thoughts. I try to catch all of the comments once I'm done doing this podcast. And I love when all of you are very, very active on this YouTube channel because, again, it helps us. Back to Drake May and the Patriots revealing their Drake May plan. Alex Van Pelt is going to be the lead voice, at least during this camp season. They have all of these coaches on the field during these practices, keeping an eagle eye on the young quarterback. And really what we're seeing is we are seeing patience from this coaching staff from the beginning of the process, from scratch. And I think fans and everybody else, as we await Drake May starting for this team inevitably down the road, I think patience is a key word. And being patient with the quarterback and understanding that this is starting from the ground level, folks. You know, I thought Jerod Mayo, he said that May has a lot to work on to the media on Saturday. I thought that was intentional. I thought that was an intentional comment from the head coach to let everybody know this young man, as of right now, he's not ready. And of course he's not ready. He's not going to be ready for a little while. He's 21 years old. He has to learn an awful lot. And he has to work on an awful lot. We talked about it. That's why it was a big swing. There is inherently some risk when you draft a quarterback at three, especially a quarterback that is so young and that we see that is raw. And when Mayo goes out there and he tells the media that May has a lot to work on, again, there is purpose behind that statement. There's a reason why Mayo is saying that. He wants to keep the young man grounded. And he wants to keep the expectations that surround that young man realistic. Don't go too far too quick. Don't expect something, right? Just let this thing develop. Let this evolve. And so Mayo going out there and publicly saying, yeah, he has a lot to work on, is telling the fans, understand the situation, understand where he is. Just because he was drafted third doesn't mean he's starting week one. Just because he was drafted third doesn't necessarily mean he's ready to light the world on fire this season. And so I liked the messaging from Mayo. I liked the messaging from Mayo to the fans, and I liked the messaging from Mayo to the player himself. You have a lot to work on. Understand where you are in this process. Don't get ahead of yourself. You have all the capability to be really freaking good one day, but you have to do things the correct way. And so I thought it was a very good message from Jerod Mayo. Greg Bedard, my buddy at Boston Sports Journal, wrote about the approach that they're taking with May. Again, this is a patient approach. It is understanding the situation with the player and how they're going to get the most out of that player. Bedard wrote, "It sure felt like May was directed to do everything, including throwing at about half speed." Did you see that ridiculous video that made its way to Twitter. Of course, it's Twitter, not the real world. But there was this tweet I saw over the weekend, video comparing Drake May and Jaden Daniels' release and how Daniels had the fast release and the ball was getting to the receivers quicker and with more zip. Yeah, it's because the Patriots had May doing everything half speed. He was dropping back half speed. He was throwing the football at half speed. Bedard continued, they, as in the coaching, they are building him up from the ground up with footwork. They can't forget about his throwing motion, which is long and has an annoying hitch where his shoulder shrugs before he throws, but he looks the part. So again, this is the idea. Everything at half speed. We're going to strip you down to zero. We know your potential. We have hope. And I'm sure some people in that building are confident that Drake May will end up being a really good quarterback at the NFL level. But they are walking into this with the right kind of frame of mind. They're walking in with realistic expectations. They understand that they have to start this thing slow. Go half speed. We're not trying to win a Super Bowl on May 11th. We're not out here looking for the Lombardi Trophy in June. Take things slow. Strip it down to almost zero. Baby steps. Baby steps in development. Work on the fundamentals. Get the basics down. I remember reading a story from Rob Domofsky at ESPN years ago when I was doing radio in Virginia Beach because I pretty much did a national show. And I remember reading that Domofsky story about Jordan Love. And at the time, there was a lot of concern about Love, a lot of concern about his inaccuracy. I remember specifically reading how they had Jordan Love throwing to a targeted net, right? And he was missing these throws all over the place. And there was concern. Man, this guy can't even hit the mark on a net. And I read some of that this weekend about Drake May, that he was throwing to this net with a target on it, and he wasn't always, you know, an accurate thrower towards that target. I read the same kind of stuff with Jordan Love. Now, the Packers, of course, had 2-3 years to work with Love. The Patriots, they have to speed up that process. But the idea is you start on the fundamentals and you go slowly. You work on the basic stuff, because if you build the basic stuff the right way, and if May has that foundation of good footwork and he works on tightening up the throwing motion, you work on those things, then you take that next step into extending plays and doing all of the things that he can do. The natural raw talent. But this is a baby step process. Go half speed at rookie minicamp. Mike Giardi wrote about May's development and how it's being handled over the weekend. Giardi wrote that May and Joe Milton spent considerable time on footwork drills, including pocket movement. They also spent a lot of time under center, which is not something either of them was asked to do often in college. And not a lot of quarterbacks at the collegiate level are getting underneath the center anymore. So, I mean, we're talking about the very basics, which we knew was going to happen. Drill the footwork. Drill the mechanics of throwing the football. Drill being under center and taking your dropbacks. And continue to drill this in the head of May over and over and over and over again. Giardi writes that there was always a camera on the quarterbacks perched on top of a monopod, usually 5 or 10 yards behind them. Van Pelt spent a lot of time alongside May and occasionally visually demonstrated the technique. So they're going half speed. They have Van Pelt working intricately with the quarterback. They have the camera set up behind the quarterback position. So they know exactly what they're watching. They will go back and they will put this film up. Right? They'll put the film up that they've recorded at minicamp. They'll sit in the room with Drake May and Joe Milton, and they'll say, what do you guys see? This is what we see. This is what you need to work on over and over and over again. There's no such thing as too much drilling when it comes to getting your quarterback developed. And so they have that camera set up to record everything that's happening. So May and Milton can look back and say, all right, that's not good. That's good. And they can see what they're doing wrong. This is how you slowly build a quarterback. You know, you didn't have to necessarily do this kind of stuff with Mac Jones because Mac, when it came to fundamentals, he pretty much had all those things straightened out. That's why everybody said he had a high floor, low ceiling, blah, blah, blah. We don't need to revisit Mac Jones too much, but it's just this idea of what kind of quarterback the Patriots have coming out of this draft. They have a projection as far as a quarterback. They have somebody who has that incredible ceiling. And if he reaches his potential, watch out. He could be a top 5 to 8 guy in the league, but he has to work on all of these little things first. And so you're going to see a lot of things when they handle Drake May that is different than Mac Jones. And of course, it's an entirely different coaching staff, but it stands to reason that you are going to slow this thing down. You are going to record every single solitary step that he makes on the field, and you're going to sit there and pore over the film with him and make sure that he knows what he's doing wrong and how he can correct those things that he's doing wrong. That's how this works. And this really is the biggest coaching responsibility of Van Pelt's career. I mean, he is getting a top-notch, raw, you know, athletic, strong-armed quarterback, a guy that if he hits the ceiling could be damn good. And it is up to Van Pelt and, of course, the others. But Van Pelt's going to be the lead voice here during this camp season. It is up to Van Pelt to get the most out of Drake May and to build this foundation correctly. If May comes out without the fundamentals, if he walks away from this camp season and there are still things that you can watch him do that make you shake your head, then that's on Van Pelt. Van Pelt, this is a huge responsibility. I mean, you think back to what he's done. He has not had this kind of responsibility working with a top 3 pick with these kinds of hopes and dreams and really having to build the young man up from the very bottom when it comes to certain mechanical issues. So he's got to straighten these things out. You know, he's developing the number 3 pick, and this is the first time he is a full-time offensive coordinator. He had that job in 2009, but we've talked about it. That was really, really funky. He had the OC job in Buffalo, but he was named the OC in 2009 in September. The Bills' offense in the preseason was wretched, and they decided to pop the OC right before the regular season began. So Van Pelt had a parachute in. I mean, he was there, but he had a parachute into the offensive coordinator position after the preseason was over. It was a mess in Buffalo that year. And by the way, he didn't have a ton of talent on that team to work with anyway. So this is the first chance for Van Pelt to be the offensive coordinator in title and in responsibility from day one of a football season. And on top of that, he is being ushered in as the developmental guru for Drake May and Joe Milton to a lesser extent. Obviously, if Milton doesn't hit, not as big of a deal since he was drafted in the 6th round. Now, there are reports all over the place that May seemed to lead well, which is great. Optimistic, confident in nature. And it seemed like his teammates were picking up what he was putting down. And that's good. The coverage of Drake May and everything that goes into this young man, this is going to be very, very meticulous. Meticulous coverage, meticulous improvement on the field from him, meticulous education from the coaching staff. That's what this is going to be. And we are going to look at every single nook and cranny of Drake May to see what kind of guy he's going to be. And early on, he certainly seems to have the leadership qualities. Again, it's very early on, but he seems to lead with his mouth. He talks to everybody, gets them involved. They seem to be almost magnetized to him early in the process. Chris Mason, if you guys want to check this out, I would do it, wrote a great article on Drake May today at Mass Live. It goes back into his childhood and how he relates to players and teammates. I would check that out. It gives you a really good feel to this man's personality and why the Patriots walked away from the combine interview and the top 30 visit and all those things. They walked away believing that May is not only somebody who has that, you know, raw ability and could be special on the field, but he's also damn good when it comes to being a leader off the field. So you could check that out, Mass Live. It's a great, great job. But optimistic, confident. That is Drake May. Swag, all of those things, that's Drake May. But I really liked reading what I read this weekend about the Patriots' approach and how they are planning and mapping this out for May. Stripping it down to almost zero, baby steps, coaching staff, fully involved, AVP in the ear, working and showing May certain mechanical things, footwork, throwing motion, having the camera out there, filming every single move by the quarterbacks, go back to the room, show him the film, work with him. Mayo coming out saying he has a lot to work on. This is the basis of what they're trying to build with Drake May. All right, Jerod Mayo is on the field for the first time in front of the media as a coach. We'll have thoughts on that coming up. But first, a word from our sponsor. Want to let you know that this show is brought to you by Warzone Paintball and Airsoft. Warzone has 9 maps on 30-plus acres of land. Trench Warfare map, Hilltop Forts. I mean, they've got everything. Paintball, Airsoft, Paintball and Airsoft for all ages starting at 6-plus. Show up with jeans, good shoes, long sleeve shirt. You're good to go. Relaxed, calm, chill atmosphere at Warzone Paintball and Airsoft. 4.9 star rating online because they are excellent at what they do. They take care of you. They're in North Kingston, Rhode Island. Don't forget, if you're around that area or you like paintball, you like airsoft, you want to take a little bit of a drive on the weekend and enjoy yourself, go to Paintball and Airsoft by Warzone there in North Kingston, Rhode Island. Give them a call at 401-228-6366. That's 401-228-6366. And I say this, Warzone Paintball and Airsoft, they are supporting this program financially. They have taken that step to help us and support us. And if you like paintball, you like airsoft, or you want to give it a try, support Warzone Paintball and Airsoft in North Kingston, Rhode Island. All right, to Jerod Mayo. It was kind of weird looking at all this video and all these pictures without Bill Belichick on the field, right? Guy was here for almost a quarter of a century. A little strange to see a Patriots practice, even if it's rookie minicamp. A little strange seeing a practice without Belichick walking around with his hoodie, with the whistle hanging from his neck. It was a little strange. Even though we all anticipated it and knew it was going to happen, it was still different. You know, and for all intents and purposes, this past weekend was Jerod Mayo's debut as the head coach. He's in front of the media, really for the first time, doing his thing. And so what did people see from Mayo? What did they pick up? Get to that in a second. I remind you, don't forget to like, comment and subscribe to this podcast. Means the world to us trying to build this community, and it's through your support. So like, comment and subscribe. Also rate and review. We have a Patreon page if you want to check it out, patreon.com/Nick Cattles. It gives you exclusive content over there for $5 a month, $1.25 a week. Here was my buddy Greg Bedard writing about Mayo this weekend. Well, Belichick is definitely no longer here. Mayo started the day by mugging for the cameras after coming up the stairs, and then he sort of just strolled around practice, stopping at every position at some point. Mayo mostly just walked around with his hands in front of his hoodie, not really interacting very much. Before 7-on-7, he called both sides in and had a brief word. That was about the extent of his quote-unquote coaching in this practice. Bedard then, with his opinion right, seems Mayo is putting the CEO and CEO coach. Doesn't really get his hands dirty, defers to his position coaches and coordinators. My initial impression was I don't think he knows what to do. I mean, why would he? He's never come close to being in this position before. Definitely learning on the job, it appears, but you can definitely see the difference from Belichick, who could coach every single position, and Mayo, who is a career linebacker and linebacker coach. All right, a few things. Everybody is entitled to their opinion, right? We know that. Here's what I would say. Here's how I'm approaching Jerod Mayo this year. Comparing Mayo to Bill Belichick is a losing game to play. In every sense of the word, when we talk about coaching, it's going to be a losing game because they are completely different human beings. For all the people that were concerned that Jerod Mayo was going to be Belichick light, it's rather obvious he is not going to be Belichick light. He is different. He is much different in certain aspects. So comparing Jerod Mayo, first-time head coach, to a coach who had 50 years of experience, including being a head coach before he got to New England, I don't think that's fair to Gerard Mayo. And I understand people will do it. I understand that it's a natural thing. He's taking over. He's replacing the GOAT. But I'm looking at Mayo as first-time head coach. I am going to judge him by the job that he does. I'm not going to compare him to Bill Belichick over and over and over again. I understand that Bill Belichick has 50 years of coaching experience and that Gerard Mayo is not even 40 years old yet, right? So Belichick has that reservoir of experience, understanding how to do something, when to do it. He's going to walk around and coach multiple positions because he knows the drill. He's been through it over and over and over again. That's what happens when you do something for decades. If you host a radio show for decades, you're going to be better at it than somebody who just walks right into the studio and pops a microphone on. If you're not better at it, then you probably should leave and do something else for a career. So what I'm not going to do when it comes down to, the ins and outs of a practice, I'm not going to compare Mayo to Belichick. Belichick has a lot of time on his resume when it comes to figuring out working with players, camp season, how he wants to do it, when he's going to do it, all those things. So comparing Mayo to Belichick, to me, it's a losing game for Mayo because Belichick had been there before over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. I'm sure Gerard Mayo, when he's done with this year, when it's all said and done, he'll look back and he'll say, oh, I should work on that. I should tweak this. I should change this. That's what happens when you get more experience. You learn from the things that you did that didn't work, and you learn from the things that did work. I would also say that I don't have much of an issue with Gerard Mayo letting his coaches and coordinators coach. I don't have a problem with a head coach delegating tasks during a rookie minicamp to his coaches and coordinators. That's why those guys are coaches and coordinators. I don't need Mayo micromanaging in the first rookie minicamp. I don't need him walking around and trying to tell Drake May how to drop back and throw a football. First of all, that's not his level of expertise. He's not an offensive guy. Second of all, maybe Mayo looks at this and says to himself, this is more about me absorbing what's happening out there. This is about me evaluating certain things. This is not about me working with the rookies and getting my, elbows dirty working with these young guys. This is more an evaluation process for me. I'm watching. I'm observing. So Mayo might believe that the rookie minicamp for him, being a head coach, is more about observation than going out there in practice and trying to teach certain things to certain guys. Let the coaches, let the coordinators handle that. I don't think if somebody does something different, it means that that something different is worse. I don't know how Mayo is going to do as a head coach. He might be a complete fail. And if he is, I'll be at the front of the line criticizing him for it. But just because he does things differently than the last head coach doesn't mean that he's doing things wrong. Just because Belichick was a micromanager and spoke to everybody and wanted to work with all the rookies on every little detail or, try to coach them up here and there, doesn't mean that's the best way to do it either. Maybe Belichick at times usurped his coaching staff by butting his nose in. Maybe not. We don't know. But Mayo can look at this, and I think it's reasonable to look at this rookie minicamp and say to himself, I'm going to let my guys coach. I'm going to let my guys coordinate. That's what they're here for. I'm going to let them do their job. That was the popular refrain, right, from Belichick all the time. Do your job. Mayo's letting his guys do their jobs. I don't have an issue with it. Maybe Mayo gets more involved with the veterans. Maybe he's letting the coaches and the coordinators work with the rookies because he wants to make sure that they have the basics down. Maybe if you have the veterans out there, Mayo is a little bit more, right? Maybe he's a little bit more involved in talking to the players and working with the players. We don't know. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, rate, and review. We also asked this question. I asked this question. How would Gerard Mayo handle the team? And we talked about Javon Baker last week and all the things that Baker said right away when he was drafted, right? on Instagram immediately, talking that talk. And I wondered, how would Jerod Mayo handle somebody like Baker? Would he handle him the same way that we've seen in the past and shut the rookie down? Would he let the rookie continue to talk? How would Mayo handle it? I wanted to see what the new head coach would do. And here's what Mayo said about Javon Baker and all the talk on Instagram. I want these guys to have a personality. I want them to feel free to talk about certain things. Look, we'll have rules of what to talk about. But now, once he puts it out there, he has to show it every day out here on the football field. If not, he's just a talker. And you start to lose respect of the locker room and things like that. So he said it. He put that out there. And now you have to show us. I love that from Mayo. I love it from Mayo. Because he's keeping it real. And the way that Mayo handled those questions on Saturday about Baker, it puts Baker on Front Street. Now the pressure is on you, young man. I don't have an issue, right? Mayo's saying, I did not have necessarily a problem. I want these guys to have a personality. But once you go out there and you say what Baker said, now you've got to back it up because it's not about me, the head coach. It's not about how I feel about what the player said. It's about his teammates. And if you say what he said on Instagram, and then you go out there and you're Fugazi on the field, your teammates are not going to respect you. You now have to back that up. In essence, if you're going to talk about it, be about it. And Mayo's right. If Baker's going to go out there and say what he said, he best back that talk up. And if he does, great. If he doesn't, he's going to look like a fool. And his teammates are not going to believe in him. It's, oh, yeah, you were chirping. You were chirping a lot about how great you were and how you were disrespected by getting drafted in the fourth round. And now you're not doing the right things as a professional. And now you're not showing it on the field. So maybe you did deserve to get drafted in the fourth round. I also thought it was interesting that Mayo admitted rules do exist. He said it. Rules exist. We'll have rules of what to talk about. So he wants personalities and he wants individuals, but don't get it twisted. Mayo is not going to allow these guys to go out there and say anything they want at any time. There has to be some rules within that locker room to make sure people aren't going too far. What those rules are, not so sure. But Mayo made it a point to say, we are going to have rules about what people say and how they talk and what we talk about. There are going to be some basic rules on how to handle the media. And I'm sure there's basic rules with social media and all that stuff. I mean, Baker wasted no time. So I think he beat the coaches to the punch. I don't think the coaches had a chance to give him the instructions and give him the rules. He came out pretty much right away and started talking. And now maybe with some time, Baker understands those rules. I also thought, by the way, this was quiet. And I don't know how many people are going to talk about this. I don't know how many people are going to overlook this. But I did notice that six of the rookies spoke to the media on Saturday. Baker was not one of those rookies who spoke to the media. And Mike Reese wrote about that yesterday at ESPN. He said, Patriots had six rookies answer questions from reporters after Saturday's practice. Baker was not one of them. Perhaps that wasn't by accident. I don't think it was by accident. I think there was purpose behind that. So Jerod comes out and says, I want these guys to have personality. We are going to have rules about what we talk about. Now he has to back it up so he doesn't look like a fraud to his teammates. And then he doesn't have Baker speak to the media after practice. I absolutely think Mayo sent a message to Baker. You talked a lot before you got here. Now the media's here. Maybe you don't talk today. Maybe you take today off. I think that was absolutely a message to Baker. And I like it. Joe Milton was also omitted from speaking to the media. I don't think that was a mistake. What were people talking about? It didn't take some people in New England long at all to talk about Joe Milton and how he was going to put pressure or he could put pressure on Drake May and how drafting Milton was a mistake because you drafted Drake May and fans would watch Milton at practice and they would start screaming for Milton. We had that conversation on this podcast a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's an accident at all that Jerod Mayo and company decided to not have Milton speak to the media. Drake May spoke to the media. And there's a point in that. Because they don't want to put any extra shine on Joe Milton. They don't want to create this idea, this, some would call it illusion, that Joe Milton in some way could beat out Drake May. So I think there was absolute purpose. I think there was absolute purpose to the two guys that didn't talk on Saturday. Javon Baker did not speak to the media because I think Mayo likely spoke to Baker behind closed doors and said, you might want to nip some of that in the bud right now, okay? So we're not going to have you talk to the media today because you've said enough. You've said how you feel. Now go out there and prove it. And I think Joe Milton, we're not going to have him step up in front of the media because we don't need this imaginary storyline that Milton and May are battling for some kind of quarterback territory with the New England Patriots. And I think that's a smart way to handle it, right? You let Baker said what he said, individual personality, great, but now show it on the field. And we're not going to have you talk to the media today because you said enough. And Joe Milton, this whole May Milton thing, we're not even going to start throwing gasoline on the fire. We're not going to have Milton go out there and say something that could be misconstrued or all that stuff, right? So I think there was purpose behind not having Baker and Milton talk to the media on Saturday. And I also think that, you know, Mayo is giving some latitude to the players, which is he's practicing what he has preached. He has told us he's going to allow these guys to be personalities. He's going to allow them to be individuals. He's not going to be as, quote unquote, hard ass, as Elliott Wolf put it, as Belichick was. And he is giving them some leeway. But clearly, there's a line. Clearly, there's a line. And that's why Baker didn't talk. And there's a line of allowing guys to go out there and say whatever. And that's why I think Joe Milton didn't talk. You don't need that stuff. Now, Mayo's been deemed a player's coach. Jaheim Bell said something that stood out to me over the weekend. Bell said, when I came on my pre-draft visit, I did not even know Mayo was the head coach until they told me it was him. Because he was like one of the players. I like coaches like that, that hang out with their players around the building. It's cool to be around a coach like that, a player-led coach. Now, I don't have an issue with Mayo hanging out with players and having fun conversations, but there's going to be a delicate balance. There's a delicate balance between being a friend and a head coach, right? And Mayo has to make sure he doesn't go into the friend zone too often. He has to continue to draw those lines when he needs to draw those lines as the head coach. Because if he doesn't and he ends up in the friend zone, that's trouble. Ryan James jumps in. I'm so sick of these Drake Jones comments. Not really sure Drake Jones. Did you mean Mac Jones? Did you mean Drake May? What comments? I'm a little confused, Ryan, if you want to add a little bit more to that, my friend. I would appreciate it, but I do appreciate your super chat. Just not really sure what the Drake Jones comments are. Is it people comparing Drake May to Mac Jones, which I think is absurd? I don't know. But so that's what we have on Mayo. Here's Ryan. Ryan says comparing Mac to Drake. Yes, it's silly, Ryan. Silly. Makes no sense. They're completely different quarterbacks. Completely different quarterbacks. Other than being Southern white boy quarterbacks, they're completely different humans. So I don't get it. I have no idea why people do it. I think it's lazy and it's ridiculous. Drake May is completely different than Mac Jones. Completely different players. From a playing style standpoint, from a trait standpoint physically, even some of the leadership stuff, the backgrounds are completely different. So I wouldn't even bother. Don't even bother with that lazy narrative. All right, one more Patriots news item. Then we'll get to some quick Celtics thoughts. We've been talking about the EVP of PP, the Executive Vice President of Player Personnel. We've been talking about who's going to get the job, that ridiculous search that the Patriots did that we all knew. We all knew that was just silly, and it was checking boxes. which is awful. And look, I'll say this at the beginning. I tweeted this over the weekend at Nick C Radio. If you want to follow me at Nick C Radio. The process was messy, was sloppy. The timing of all of this was awkward. But I really don't have an issue with the Patriots landing on Gerard Mayo, head coach, and Elliot Wolf, executive vice president of player personnel. Process was sloppy. Timing was awkward. Could have been done much better. I thought there were missteps along the way. Clearly missteps. But the result is the result. And I'm okay with Mayo and Wolf. And that's what happened over the weekend. Elliot Wolf was officially named the man on top of the totem pole, the mountain, whichever you want to call it. The Patriots had a press release on Elliot Wolf being named EVP of player personnel. They wrote, Wolf's responsibilities will include the overall direction of the personnel department, the management of the salary cap, and in control of the 53-man roster. Robert Kraft said, as I have stated multiple times during this offseason, the plan was to observe the working relationship and involvement between Elliot and Gerard and see how they manage our off-season personnel decisions. Then following the draft, we would formally undertake a process for setting up the permanent structure of our personnel department. I have been impressed with Elliot's management style and experience, and I'm excited that he has agreed to take on this new position. It is the right decision. Elliot Wolf has earned this gig. Elliot Wolf earned this gig before this offseason began. I didn't have much of an issue with how free agency went. I thought the draft was really solid, and I was lower on the draft than some people. I had the draft as a B grade, acknowledging that giving a draft a grade is ridiculous on the surface because we won't truly know what this draft was until 3 years down the road. I digress. But I gave this draft a B. A lot of other people gave it a B+, an A-, an A, an A+. I gave it a B. I thought it was a very solid draft with some exciting players that I think could help sooner rather than later. But, you know, when I look at it, free agency, the draft, overall, I thought Elliot Wolf did a solid job given the circumstances. You were not going to fill three critical positions with top of the food chain kind of talent. It just wasn't going to happen. Very difficult to do. So, I thought this is the right decision. And I've thought that from the beginning. As soon as Gerard Mayo was made the coach, I mentioned this, as soon as Mayo was promoted, you have the guy that Mayo has a working relationship with, somebody who is more than experienced enough to do the job, has the resume, has the reputation, give him his shot. And if you're going to have Elliot Wolf run this offseason, it would have been the dumbest thing on God's green earth to then replace him with somebody. That would have been absurd in every way. So this is the right decision, making Elliot Wolf the guy. I also like that this role was publicly stated and clearly defined. The Patriots put in the press release Wolf's responsibilities. They are spelling it out. The overall direction of the personnel department, the management of the salary cap. He's in control of the 53-man roster. So Elliot Wolf has the final call on the 53-man. He will have oversight on the salary cap and how it is used. And he will also be in charge of structuring the front office and making sure the people in the front office are taking care of their responsibilities. So I don't know what else people want from the Crafts. I really don't know what else they want. The people that are still thinking that Jonathan Kraft is the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain at Gillette Stadium, I don't know what is going to appease those people. The Patriots have now said it in front of the media. They have now put it on paper as part of an official statement from the team. Elliot Wolf is the guy. And could they be lying? Sure, they could be lying. Certainly a possibility. But I don't know what else they're supposed to do to make people feel like Elliot Wolf actually has the power to make these decisions. They've given him the job. They've given him the role. They have made him the primary football executive. They have put in a statement to the fans and to all of football that Elliot Wolf is the guy, and this is precisely what he's going to do. I don't know what else people want from the Crafts. I don't know. Maybe they have to sign something in blood in front of the public. Maybe we have to surveillance Gillette Stadium 24/7, 365 and release all the tapes on a weekly basis. Maybe we need to wiretap the offices. I don't know what else they would need to do to prove that Elliott Wolf's the guy. The people that always want the shroud of secrecy and they want to roll with the Wizard of Oz, they're going to continue to do that. Wolf and Mayo both reporting to ownership. There could be some possible issues there. Not in love with the idea of having the head coach and the EVP of player personnel reporting to ownership. If the coach is reporting to ownership about personnel, that could be a bit of a problem. You know, if things start going off the rails a little bit, does one start to blame the other? Now, Chad Graff of The Athletic wrote that while Mayo and Wolf are expected to work together, Mayo will have the final say in game planning and in-game decisions, while Wolf gets the final say in roster construction. Both will report to Kraft. And this is where the working relationship and the trust is huge. And that relationship and that trust will be tested. It will be tested with both guys reporting to ownership, because one could throw the other one under the bus. I can't believe. You know, Drive Mayo can go to ownership and say, I can't believe Jalen Polk was our second-round pick. This guy can't play. Can't believe Elliott picked him, right? Not saying he'll do it, but the opportunity is there if he wanted to. You know, who plays? How much do they play? What are their roles? What if guys fail? We'll see how this works out. But I'm fine with Elliott Wolf as the shot caller, and I'm fine with Gerard Mayo as the head coach. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Take a second of your time. Again, like this podcast. Give us that thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. That's how you can support us. Rate and review on Spotify and Apple Pods if you're listening on demand. All right, some quick Celtics thoughts before we get game four tonight in Cleveland. Great game three response. And by the way, if you want my Bruins reaction, you can get that from last night. We did a post-game podcast on the Bees and Panthers game. You can get that on the channel. But a great game three for the Celtics, especially defensively. It reminded me of what they did against Miami in game three. So they had intent. They had purpose. Their pickup points were much higher. Their ball pressure was better. Getting in the airspace of shooters contesting shots. I thought we saw that defensive intensity and attention to detail more on Saturday night than we certainly saw game two. So very similar path the Celtics took against Miami so far against Cleveland. Shout out to Donovan Mitchell. I mean, that guy was unbelievable on Saturday night, especially through the first three quarters. Sometimes you just tip your cap. And Mitchell off the dribble, his pull-up game off the dribble was obnoxiously good on Saturday night. I mean, that guy could not miss off the dribble. And again, sometimes you just have to tip your cap. That was really most of Cleveland's offense. I mean, if Mitchell hit a number of tough shots, if he doesn't make those tough shots that he made, this game is even more of a blowout. This would have been a laugher if Mitchell didn't keep his team in the game in the first half. And he did that by just hitting great shot after great shot. That dude is a competitor, and he can make difficult shots. And when he gets rolling, he's really tough to stop. And if he wasn't as hot as he was in that first half, hitting those difficult shots, I think this could be a 25, 30-point blowout by the end of the night on Saturday. So credit to Donovan Mitchell. Jrue Holiday showed up. I eviscerated Jrue Holiday for what he has done and really not done through this postseason. On Saturday night, Jrue Holiday showed up. He showed up big, and he showed up early. He played with intention. He played with force. And what I liked was he put the pressure on Donovan Mitchell to defend, and he talked about it. You know, Holiday was being too passive at times with his offense. He's bigger. He's stronger than Donovan Mitchell. Force Mitchell to defend. And that's what he did. Because if you force Mitchell to defend through the first half, through the first three quarters, by the time you get to the fourth quarter, with how much that guy has to put out there offensively, if you're forcing him to defend from possession to possession, by the fourth quarter, his gas tank is going to be very low. So Holiday attacking Donovan Mitchell early in this game, it took some of that gas tank away from Mitchell. He wasn't the same guy in the fourth quarter. He might also be a little tweaked with an injury. But make Mitchell defend. I thought Holiday was tremendous in that first half. Jaylen Brown was excellent. this was more like game one Jaylen Brown instead of game two Jaylen Brown. I thought he was very efficient offensively. He did not take many bad shots at all. I thought Brown was really good on both ends of the floor. And now let's get to Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, he gets criticized for not taking enough shots against Miami. He gets criticized for taking too many shots against Cleveland. Can people pick a lane with Jason Tatum? I don't know if anybody, even here in Boston, is calling Tatum the best player in the NBA. But for some reason, there are some, especially in the local media, who want to treat it like people are calling Jason Tatum the best player in the NBA. He is a superstar. He is not the guy in the league. He didn't win the MVP the last time I checked. But Tatum, look, he's a superstar, and I think he's played really well in the playoffs. When you consider everything that you do on the floor, he's not shooting well. We all see that. He's struggling from the floor. But what he's doing is he's defending at a high level. He's rebounding at a high level. He's playmaking at a high level. He's consistently being unselfish and finding his open teammates for shots. It's not on him to make those shots as well as his own shots. And I think Jason Tatum is a major reason why you're 5-2 in the playoffs so far. He's a major reason why you closed out Miami in five, and he's a big, 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 big reason why you're up 2-1 against Cleveland. We tend to always just pay attention to the shooting numbers and the points when we talk about superstar players. What does the guy do in other aspects of the game that impact a series? In defensively, rebounding, playmaking, all of those things count. And some people don't want to count them. Well, that's cool for those people. I count all of those things. If Jason Tatum is 5-20 one night and he's shooting the ball awful, but he's attacking and he's approaching the game the right way and he's not settling a ton, he's not forcing a ton, he's just missing good shots, that's different than going out there and jacking up 20 terrible shots. Every superstar in the league is going to force 3 or 4 shots a game. It happens. Every single one of them, except maybe Nikola Jokic. But 98% of the superstars in the NBA, they force shots. And so to go into a game expecting Jason Tatum to not force a couple of shots, it's unreasonable expectations from you. He's going to force a couple. He's going to settle for 2 or 3 shots where you scratch your head. He did that on Saturday night. He settled for a couple of threes. I thought he had 4 or 5 bad shots in that game. It's going to happen. But the most important part is, does Tatum allow that to impact his play? Does he allow it to impact his defense? Does he allow it to impact his playmaking ability? His rebounding? No, he's fully engaged. When Tatum is rebounding as well as he's rebounding right now, that tells you he cares about the series. He cares about what's happening. He's been fully engaged on the glass. He's been fully engaged, for the most part, defensively. And the reason why you ran through Miami is because Tatum made the right play when he was doubled consistently. He was drawing doubles. He was kicking to the open man. He was driving and kicking. He was drawing the double team on the perimeter so he could swing it to start the action, to knock down wide open threes. Those plays matter. Jason Tatum creating a wide open three is as good as Jason Tatum hitting a three. And that's the way we should look at it. We shouldn't be so simplified with our breakdowns of a player's game because a lot goes into it. A lot. There are plenty of guys in this league that could score 35 points any given night, but can they defend? Because, yeah, you could score 35, but are you giving up 25 on the other end? If Tatum scores 25, but he plays the kind of defense he's playing and he creates for his teammates, then what are we complaining about? And I thought that Tatum on Saturday night, he was in full attack mode. And in attack mode, Tatum is my favorite Tatum. That's the Tatum I love seeing. Taking it to the rack. Being aggressive. Not settling. And I thought we saw a lot of that on Saturday night. And you have to believe that water will rise to its level. You have to believe that Tatum eventually will start knocking down these open shots. Other guys are missing shots, right? I mean, it can happen. Derek White was on absolute fire. Dude couldn't miss for a three-game stretch. Last two games, he can't throw it in the ocean. Doesn't mean every shot he's taking is a bad shot. How about Peyton Pritchard's fourth quarter three from the logo? 11 seconds left on the shot clock. Talk about cojones. But let's talk about more JT here for a minute, okay? Let's put things in perspective. Dick Leip tweeted this out on Saturday. Tatum had his 24th career playoff game with at least 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. That ties Tatum with Bill Russell, Charles Barkley, and Hakeem Olajuwon for 10th most all time. And I remind you that Jason Tatum is 26 years old. Had his 24th career playoff game of 20, 10, and 5. Goes along with names like Bill Russell, Barkley, and Olajuwon. And he's 26. His growth as a playmaker cannot be overlooked. I also think, you know, all these questions about Tatum and Brown's leadership. Al Horford mentioned this in the post game. Tatum apparently challenged the team at halftime. So all the people that say Tatum doesn't talk to his team enough, he doesn't have enough emotion, he doesn't challenge guys, he doesn't challenge himself. Well, according to Al Horford, that's not true. Because at halftime, Tatum went to a man and challenged them all and made sure they came out the right way in the third quarter, which they did. Jaylen Brown apparently gave the team a pep talk before the game, fired them up. So for the people that want Tatum and Brown to lead, they're leading, folks. They're leading. Not telling you it's guaranteeing a championship, but they're leading. Now, as far as Tatum shooting, again, you can't control that at times. What I watch when I watch Tatum is for his intent and his shot selection. That's what I'm watching for. And I thought Tatum was tremendous on Saturday night when he was responding to a question about the media scrutiny over his shooting. And Jared Weiss posted this on Twitter. Here's what Tatum said. I respect your guys' job. I respect the guys on TV. I don't always agree with the things that they say. When they're fair and they take emotion out of it, whatever way they're leaning towards and they're fair, I respect it. I understand what the media has brought to our game and more eyes and more attention and how everybody has benefited from that. So I wouldn't say I take it as disrespect, right? Like I said, I don't always agree with what they say. Maybe I feel like they're not watching everything else that I'm doing, but that's not my job to focus on that or give it any attention. My job is to be the best player I can be for our team any given night. Yeah, I would love to make every shot I take, and I know I can shoot better, and I will. But at this time of the season, as long as we win and we're trending in the right direction, I know me scoring will come. I've done that plenty of times. So I just try to impact the game in other ways and just dominate the game and not be defined as just a score. Isn't that what people want? Don't you want your superstar saying, I'm not just trying to dominate this basketball game by scoring. I'm trying to dominate the game as much as I can and as many different ways that I can. Defending, rebounding, playmaking. This is what Tatum has done. His plus minus against Miami, you know, how the team performed with him on the floor and off the floor, it was through the roof. I think Tatum has 100% taken the correct approach in this postseason. Are there shots he shouldn't take? Of course, but that happens with everybody, every superstar. He has been approaching the game the right way. He has the right intention. He has the right purpose. He's fully engaged. And we're all wrapped up in the narrative that, you know, Tatum doesn't like to grab teams by the throat. I mean, go back to Milwaukee Game 6 in 2022 when he single-handedly carried the Celtics through that win, got back to Boston for Game 7, and then, of all people, Grant Williams catches fire and they win Game 7. But if Tatum Game 6 at Milwaukee doesn't happen, that season is over. They don't get to the finals against the Warriors. You go back last year, Game 7 against Philadelphia. Everybody was talking, will Tatum show up? Does Tatum have that killer instinct? He murdered Philadelphia in Game 7. So I think he's been really good overall, and that should be the conversation. All right, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. If you're listening on demand, rate and review Spotify and Apple Pods. That'll do it for us today. Back tomorrow. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for investing your time on this Monday. Until next time, it's the Nick Cattle Show.